Iran says reviving the JCPOA is tied to the West making political decisions and once again calls for the verifiable removal of sanctions. Germany's top diplomat and Ukraine's president play down U.S. warnings about an imminent Russian invasion of Ukraine. France's announcement of an upcoming military withdrawal from Mali prompts celebrations in the African country. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News. Here in the Iranian capital, I'm your host, Behzad Zarifi. Good to have you with us. Iran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 agreement are engaged in intense negotiations to revive the landmark accord. The Iranian foreign ministry says that the West, the United States in particular, is responsible for a possible failure of the talks.
Now we are at a very sensitive time, and the other side should be realistic. And if the talks fail, we believe that it is the Americans and the other side that are responsible for it. And the Islamic Republic of Iran has shown its seriousness and has shown that it really wants the deal to be done.
Amir Abdullahi made a comment in an interview with CNN on the sidelines of the Munich Security Conference. He said that Iran is ready for a good deal in the shortest amount of time, provided that the other side is ready to make necessary political decisions. According to the top diplomat, Iran's demands, including a verifiable removal of all sanctions that are inconsistent with the 2015 agreement, and the guarantees it's seeking for the fulfillment of commitments by the other parties, are absolutely reasonable. The eighth round of negotiations to restore the deal is underway in the Austrian capital. Political commentator Bijan Tavassoli says it is the U.S. that has to make political decisions, not Iran, in order to salvage the 2015 deal.
But then we are now seeing signs of France, Germany, and even Great Britain coming over to this side and telling the Americans that it's their turn to make some moves now. That's a very significant development. And I think that it depends on the strength of the Biden administration, whether they are able to really make those moves. That, I mean, the majority of the staffers in the White House know that the onus is on them now. But I'm not sure whether they're strong enough to push it through domestically, even in their own party, even while they see that this is the only way forward. And the impetus is now on the American side because, as you well know, oil and gas prices are at record highs now, and so this is contributing to an inflationary environment in the United States that is really putting pressure on Democratic candidates in the 2022 elections. And so the party of Joe Biden could be gone in the election if they don't make this deal.
The situation remains tense in eastern Ukraine amid renewed fighting between government troops and pro-Russia forces. Ukrainian military says the pro-Russia forces have opened fire on more than 20 settlements and killed two soldiers. Explosions were also reported north of Donetsk City. A second exploded shell has been found on Russian territory near the border. A leader of pro-Russia forces in eastern Ukraine has ordered a full troop mobilization over fears of an offensive.
We should unite all our efforts. I call on my fellow countrymen, reservists, to report to mobilization officers. Today I have signed a decree on general mobilization. I call on all men in the Republic able to hold a weapon in their hands to stand up to protect your families, your children, wives and mothers. Together we will achieve the desired and necessary victory for us all. We will protect Donbass and all Russian people.
Pro-Russia forces in eastern Ukraine are continuing to evacuate residents of Donetsk and surrounding areas as several buses were seen leaving for Russia. The situation escalated a few days ago when both sides accused each other of violating a 2015 ceasefire. Russia has expressed concerns over the renewed clashes, describing the situation as potentially very dangerous. Moscow also denies Western accusations that it's planning an invasion of Ukraine. A U.S. official says more than 40% of Russian forces on the Ukraine border are in an attack position, and Moscow has begun a campaign of destabilization. What appears to be a reaction to Washington's latest warnings that a Russian invasion of Ukraine is just around the corner German Foreign Minister says it's inappropriate to guess or assume what will happen at critical times. Annalena Baerbock says that even though a threat against Ukraine is very real, it's not known yet if an attack has been decided on. She made comments after hosting a G7 foreign ministerial meeting on the sidelines of a security conference in Munich. She said that a group of 7 states, including the U.S., have reaffirmed support for Ukraine and are determined to respond to any violation of its sovereignty. Speaking at the same event, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky also pushed back against Washington's dire predictions. He said that right now there is no need to panic. The U.S. accuses Russia of planning an attack on Ukraine, but Moscow says that's not true. Well, we've asked our Brussels correspondent, Jerem Hughes, what European lawmakers make of the flare-up of tensions between Russia and the West, and here's what he had to say.
It's more or less the same line that the West has been pushing in recent weeks since this sort of crisis escalated, and what basically the European Union, the United States and the UK are saying is that Russia will effectively be cut off from the international financial system if there is an invasion of Ukraine. So, and it's that when we heard the debate being debated in the European Parliament, there were a sizable number of MEPs, members of the European Parliament, lawmakers, who were saying that this is just the wrong track to go down, that this constant anti-Russia rhetoric, which we've been seeing building up now for years and years, and these constant threats about the SWIFT system, which is, you know, effectively the international trading and currency system, to cut Russia off from SWIFT and so on. And it's the type of rhetoric that really has been unhelpful, according to many lawmakers. So we've seen an escalation in the threats. We've seen the likes of Joe Biden talking about making sure that the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline project between Russia and Germany, that just will be scrapped if there's an invasion of Ukraine.
The Somali energy minister has angered top officials for signing a deal with a U.S. company to explore oil and gas off the country's coast. The office of President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed says that the agreement is null and void. It also issued a decree banning any such agreements with foreign governments and entities during the election period. Prime Minister Mohamed Hussein Roble has also dismissed the agreement as illegal and unacceptable. He says he'll do whatever is needed to protect national resources. Somalia has gone through an election process that's more than a year overdue. It's also been marred by violence, including a Saturday attack in the central city of Beledweyne that killed 14 people. Well, joy in celebrations in Bamako, the capital of Mali, over a planned withdrawal of French troops. French President Emmanuel Macron says that his troops will leave Mali in an orderly way over 4 to 6 months. Mali's ruling junta insists that a pullout needs to happen without delay. Relations between the two countries worsened sharply after Mali's army seized power in a coup in 2020. France currently has some 5,000 troops deployed across the Sahel, the majority of them in Mali. Paris says its troops are tasked with fighting militants in the region, but Mali says the former colonial power intends to partition the country. Academic and journalist Mustafa Fattouri believes that the French military presence has worsened the security situation in Africa, and it will most likely continue to do so in the future.
I think the security situation in the Sahel region, extending from all the way to in the east to Sudan, is less stable, less secure than it was in 2013, when first France sent its troops to fight what it calls jihadists and terrorist groups. So the whole area has been, I wouldn't say mainly because of the French military intervention, but that was a contributing factor. The whole area has been destabilized much worse than it was. The number of attacks by terrorist groups has increased and has been a trans-border problem, not only in Mali, but we have seen it in Niger, we have seen it in Burkina Faso especially, where there has been a recent military takeover, mainly for this reason, lack of security. So the same problem is existing in Chad in a different form, and then all the way to Sudan, probably the contagion, the effect will continue.
All right, let's move on. Nearly 1 month into Canada's protests against COVID restrictions, police now saying significant progress has been made in removing protesters from the streets of the capital, Ottawa.
Today we made some very important progress in safely removing this unlawful protest from our streets. At every step in this operation, we've been upfront and clear with the unlawful protesters that they must leave the area. We've advised them of our enforcement efforts so they could continue to make informed decisions. We've backed up those warnings with a deliberate and methodical operation using lawful and safe tactics.
Now, the official says that police at some point had to use horses, helmets, and batons to secure the safety of officers. Ottawa Police Chief also called on all the protesters remaining on the streets to go home. Early in the day, police clashed with protesters in the city, using pepper sprays and stun grenades to disperse them.
Don't push back!
Now, more than 140 people have been arrested and dozens of vehicles seized over the past 2 days. Organizers of the so-called Freedom Convoy say they've asked truckers to withdraw because of the heavy-handed police tactics. The massive crackdown comes after Prime Minister Justin Trudeau invoked emergency powers to deal with the ralliers. The demonstrations initially started in January by truckers who are opposed to rules that require unvaccinated cross-border drivers to quarantine. But the protests have turned into a rallying point for all people who are in some way opposed to the policies of Trudeau's government. The political commentator Ken Stone believes that the protests in Canada are being fueled by separatists in the country and provided for by supporters of former U.S. President Donald Trump's supporters and allies.
Well, I have three things to say about the so-called Freedom Convoy. It has nothing to do with freedom. This protest was inspired by the former U.S. President Trump, Donald Trump, who subjected the Islamic Republic of Iran to a campaign of maximum pressure during his entire term of office. And he has encouraged and applauded this, so have some of his Republican governors in Texas and Florida, for example. He's encouraged people in the United States to give money, his supporters, and they have given a large part of the funding that went into this protest. In addition, the money comes as well from evangelical Christians in the United States. So the protest is not about freedom, and it is a right-wing fringe group that is leading these protests. This is their second convoy. They had one in 2019, and it was led by a woman, the same woman who was just arrested yesterday, and she belongs to a Western separatist party, which wants to break away Canada's Western provinces and join them with the United States.
Now over to Brazil, where search and rescue operations continue. Nearly 200 people are still unaccounted for in the wake of devastating floods and landslides. Rescue workers pulled more bodies on Saturday from the muddy wreckage and rubble in the city of Petropolis, where the death toll has risen to 146. Bad weather hampered the search for survivors, and emergency teams had to suspend their work several times. More than 900 people have been housed in schools and shelters. With a search in its fifth day, authorities say there is little hope of finding any more survivor. Teams of volunteers are also helping with search and rescue efforts. Tuesday's rainfall exceeded the average for the whole of February, triggering landslides and floods in Petropolis, that's a popular tourist getaway north of Rio de Janeiro. Australia has joined the club of U.S. allies that have designated the Palestine Resistance Movement, Hamas, as a terrorist organization. The Australian government says it takes issue with the Hamas ideologies. Now, the next report sheds more light on why Israel targeted Hamas this time and why resistance groups are often targets of Western governments like the U.S.
The Australian government announces a plan to blacklist the whole of Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. The country had previously designated Hamas's military wing, the Al-Qassam Brigades, back in 2003. Under the new restrictions, which will go into force in April, financing or providing any support to Hamas will be criminalized, with some offenses carrying a 25-year prison sentence. The reason for the blacklisting is what Canberra calls the group's, quote, hateful ideologies. But let's dive deeper and learn more about the Gaza-based group. Ever since Hamas scored a landslide victory in Gaza's parliamentary elections in 2006, it has been running the besieged enclave. Protecting the Strip has been one of the group's core responsibilities. Over the years, it has carried out the responsibility, the most recent instance of which came in May 2021, during the Israeli military's 11-day war on the Gaza Strip. The war killed some 250 Palestinians, including 66 children, but only 12 Israelis. If it weren't for the deterrent capabilities of the group, the number of Palestinian casualties would have been a lot higher. How would this justify branding the group as a terrorist organization?
I think Australia has chosen this moment to designate Hamas as a so-called terrorist group. Has nothing to do with what's actually happening on the ground in occupied Palestine, which is actually an acceleration of the Zionist genocide of the native people of Palestine. But what it has to do with is the flexing of the muscle of the Jewish power lobby in Australia.
The case in point is that any group whose ideology goes against that of the U.S. and its allies is hit with such allegations.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shmanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, February 20th, 2022. I'm Atefa Erfani hosting this program today. Listeners Special is a Sunday program where your views and messages are presented through emails and letters. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. Or if you have any message for our listeners around the world, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is your program, Listeners Special, the Sunday program. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, As you may know, these reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. So all of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an eQSL card from us. That is an electronic QSL card, because we are in the time of pandemic and we send our listeners an electronic QSL card. So here I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, which I mentioned some of their names here. Bithan Chandra Sunil from India, Bill McDavid from the US, and Heikki Puranin from Finland. Thank you. We want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio, your radio. And of course, many people, many of our listeners around the world have sent us emails, which I mentioned some of their names here. And later during the program, I will read these great emails. From India, we have an email from Kalol Nath. I wish I'm right in pronouncing this name. And from Argentina, from Southern Hemisphere, we have an email from Nestor D. Fischetto, of course, one of our regular listeners. And from the Northern Hemisphere, from Finland, we have received an email from Heikki Puranen. And the last but not the least in this program, of course, we have an email from Malaysia, from Muhammad Fazli, one of our regular listeners. Please stay with us. I will be back with these great emails. Welcome back. As I said, we've received an email from Kalol Nath from India. Let's see what Kalol tells us. Dear IRIB, thank you very much for your keen interest on listeners' mails and emails. I do appreciate your attention. I am a shortwave enthusiast and I listen to various nations' radio stations. I'm very much interested to know more about your country and your culture and history. A kind of photo about your architecture and your traditions is welcomed. Salam and warm greetings to you, Kalol Nath from India. And thank you very much for sending us this message. We also do appreciate your attention to IRIB English Radio. Kalol Nath from India. So you prefer listening to shortwave radio? You are a shortwave radio enthusiast and you listen to various nations' radio stations, and it's great. Of course, most people prefer listening to shortwave radio, a traditional kind of radio, and it's most favorable between many people around the world, and it's great. I do also prefer listening to shortwave radio, a traditional kind of radio. So, if you are interested in the culture and architecture and tradition of Iran, you can listen to various kind of programs about the Iranian culture, traditions, architecture, etc. Through IRIB English Radio. Yes, right now we broadcast a program called Close Up Iran, which introduces Iran's tourist attractions. And I think it is aired on Mondays. You can find the exact time on our website with the address of www.parstoday.com/en. And you can also find the archive of different programs about Iran in this website, including Iranian notable sources of global honor, Iranian family, Iranian cinema, many different programs about the Iranian traditions, culture, and architecture. Kalol Nath from India, my colleagues will soon send you an eQSL card as a confirmation. Thank you very much for writing to your radio, IRIB English Radio. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon, Kalol from India. And here we've received such a long email from Argentina. This email is from Nestor Di Fischetto. Let's see what Nestor says. Thank you very much for answering my email. I'm really very happy to receive your EQSL. It is a highly valued confirmation for my collection. Regarding the coronavirus pandemic in Argentina, here, we are going through a third wave, in this case, due to the Omicron variant. In total, we have been detecting cases for almost 2 years, with a total of approximately 8 million infections and 120,000 deaths. The third wave, although it is much more contagious, is not proving as lethal, also in part due to the progress of the vaccination campaign. 76% of the population have already received their second dose, and the booster dose is already being implemented in 25% of the people. We also continue with the usual care of the use of face masks and avoid crowds of people, although this is difficult to achieve in a country like Argentina, where we are used to gatherings of people at sports and entertainment events. In particular, my son, my wife, and I were isolated until last week for testing positive for COVID-19. We had fever, cough, and dizziness that lasted a week, but now we are very well. I hope that you in Iran are handling this pandemic in the best possible way. It is a situation that had great drama throughout the world and that we are learning to cope with. Best regards from Argentina. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Nestor Di Fischetto from Argentina. Actually, we're so sorry that you tested positive for coronavirus. Actually, you, your wife, and your son, you said, we're sorry and thank God you're getting well. And thank God you're okay and well right now. Please observe the protocols, using face masks, being isolated, avoid gatherings and crowds, and of course different kinds of protocols that have been observed in different countries around the world. And we hope that this virus comes to an end soon around the world. There is a question here. Are you vaccinated? Have you received the booster dose of vaccine? Please tell us if you've received it. So we wish that this pandemic comes to an end very soon, not just in your country, Argentina, but also in different countries around the world. And regarding your question about the pandemic in my country, in Iran, for your information, in Iran, the majority of the people have been vaccinated and the majority of people have received the booster dose, that is the third dose. And everything is okay, almost okay in Iran regarding this virus. And my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. And that's all. Please take care of yourself, Nestor Di Fischetto from Argentina, in the time of pandemic. And send our greetings to your wife and your son. Write to us soon, Nestor. We are of course, looking forward to hearing from you soon. And don't forget to tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs in your upcoming email. So, after a short break, I will be back with other emails from around the world. Stay with us. Welcome back from Finland, from one of the coldest, regions of the world in Northern Hemisphere. We've received an email from Heikki Puranin. Let's see what Heikki says. Dear friends, thank you for the verification you sent me recently via email. I enjoy your programs. I wish I could understand your language, Farsi, so that I could enjoy the Farsi programs of IRIB as well. Best regards. Salam and warm greetings to you in this cold winter. This salam and greeting is from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, to you, Heikki Pranin from Finland. We're so glad that you wrote to us. And of course, you said you enjoyed the programs, and that's great. It's a pleasure. We hope, of course, because you mentioned you like to understand Farsi language. So we hope that you learn it, Farsi language. Then you can enjoy this sweet language. I think Farsi is a very sweet and great language. Then you can enjoy this great language and enjoy it. And then you can listen to Farsi programs of IRIB, the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. Heikki Pranin from Finland, thank you very much for writing to us. And thank you for telling us and letting us know what you think about IRIB English radio programs and telling us your favorite language, Farsi. So, Heikki Pranin from Finland, my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with an email from Malaysia from Muhammad Fazli. Welcome back. Let's see what Muhammad Fazli from Malaysia, one of our regular listeners, says. So, here's the story. Dear sir and madam, assalamu alaikum and greetings. I have been following IRIB English radio for a couple of years via shortwave broadcast from my location in Malaysia. But last year, due to the changing of my work shift, I couldn't enjoy regular programs via shortwave. This year, I tried to get some time to listen via shortwave broadcast, but to no avail, I received no reception at all. I waited for weeks for improvement, but there's still no reception of IRIB English radio at this frequency. Meanwhile, at my location and that time, that is 7300 kilohertz, is strongly occupied by China National Radio. I believe this 7300 kilohertz frequency is not suitable for reception of IRIB English radio in my region. As far as I know, the change of frequency of season is coming soon. I hope your radio technician or whoever is responsible for the transmission can take notice to avoid any interference with other broadcasters and to improve the quality of radio broadcast. I am eager to listen to IRIB English radio on shortwave again in my region. For now, I have to use WebSDR to enjoy IRIB English radio, which is beamed toward Europe. I also listen to IRIB English radio via podcast on Pars Today website. As you know, both methods require internet connection. I believe other listeners might not have the privilege of a stable internet connection as I did. I hope IRIB English Radio can stay as long as possible because you have a lot of unique programs such as Communique and Subcontinent, which offer different and unheard issues of the current event. That's all from me now. I wish the IRIB team and Iranians are in good health. Salam and warm greetings to you, Muhammad Fazli from Malaysia, and many thanks for writing this email to us and telling us your troubles with listening to shortwave in your region, because you said you changed your work shift and in your new place in the new region, you can't enjoy the regular programs of IRIB English Radio, and that's a pity. Of course, we will inform our engineers and technicians about this trouble, and then you can enjoy the IRIB English radio programs. But for the time being, you can refer to our website at www.parstoday.com/en. And it has also the live, of course, the it has the live coverage of the events, and it has the live broadcast of IRIB English Radio. You can enjoy it for the time being through our website. But of course, my colleagues, our radios, technicians and engineers will fix the problems, and then you can enjoy the programs as usual on the shortwave. Muhammad Fazli from Malaysia, again, thank you very much for telling us these troubles. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card, an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Tell us in your upcoming emails, tell us if your problem is fixed. Thank you, Muhammad Fazli from Malaysia. Stay with us. Anna, what can I wish for you? The best thing I can wish for our listeners around the world is being in good health. Thank you for being with us. Please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio, and in particular, the listeners especially, and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Lebanon's resistance movement, Hezbollah, has called one of its most recent achievements flying an advanced drone on a 40-minute reconnaissance mission over Israel. Is this a sign that the once invincible Israeli army is not invincible anymore? In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at how Israel's military capabilities have not been able to shield it from the resistance group's firepower, which include Hamas, and how it would not be able to withstand a war with Hezbollah. Let's find out more about this particular development from our correspondent, Mariam Saleh, who joins us from Beirut. Well, Mariam, this particular piece of news is pretty amazing in itself. I don't know if you have details behind this drone that flew 40 minutes into Israeli airspace and back. What do we know about this?
Well, we know that it flew for, like you said, 40 minutes, but also 70 kilometers deep within the territories of northern Palestine. And as you said, that in and of itself is very significant development. Strategic experts believe that this is very significant when it comes to the actual face-off between Hezbollah and the Israelis. This is on one hand, of course, as you know, the drone was named Hassan after the founder of this unit in Hezbollah. This is a unit of experts that are basically have an expertise in building, making, and as we know right now, of course, making their own drones and maintaining and flying those drones in order to use them, of course, in any sort of combat. But now what we have is that the Israelis are taking the war towards the Hezbollah, is taking this to the Israelis themselves. But what is even more significant, we learned from the Israeli Yedioth Ahronot daily, from their website platform, that this also coincided with a maneuver that was taking place by the Israeli army, which simulated a possible Hezbollah drone attack. So that in itself, ironically, shows that Hezbollah seemed to know, first of all, about those maneuvers. Second of all, they were sending a message to the Israelis that you cannot stop our drones from actually entering. So we had the Iron Dome, we had the F-16 fighter jets. They could not intercept that drone, which could have not just been there for surveillance and reconnaissance and for spying. It could also have been for the sake of even conducting a military operation. So all of these issues put in light, and it seems that, as experts are saying, Hezbollah has taken the face-off with the Israelis to a very higher level right now.
Thank you for that, Mariam Sali. We appreciate it. Our correspondent there from Beirut. Okay, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. We have activist and political commentator Leif Maouf joining us from Beirut. Also joining us, journalist and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas joins us from London.
The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Leif, I'm going to start with you. So what are we looking at over here? A reconnaissance mission that took 40 minutes and it was 70 kilometers. It was a drone and it went over Israel. I mean, it couldn't get any better for Hezbollah as a success. What do you see the different, messages this sends from the capabilities to what then it means for Israel?
Let's remember that this came just a few days after the speech of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of Hezbollah, on the commemoration of the Leader Martyrs Day. And in that speech, he warned the Zionists that the resistance in Lebanon has acquired the capabilities to upgrade all its dumb missile stockpile, the ones that are not guided missiles, and have done so, and also are capable of building their own drones, and they're ready for business to sell these drones. And so much of the jokes on the social media in Lebanon have been that this was a test run for a drone for somebody who wants to buy it from Hezbollah. So this shows you the difference in readiness between the resistance and the Zionist entity for the next war. This comes also, of course, in the speech. Sayyid Nasrallah pointed out that they're activated their air defenses and that they're ready to take down any Israeli drones that cross into Lebanon. And now we have that warning by Sayyid Nasrallah being juxtaposed against the reality of Hezbollah being able to breach the airspace of the Zionist entity. The next coming war, there'll be hundreds of these drones. They'll take out all the positions of the Zionist forces in North Palestine in minute easily without being taken down. And this has been shown to us by this trip with this drone, 70 kilometers. That means it almost reached Jenin in the Northwest Bank, which means that even in a war that includes Gaza, the West Bank, inside Palestine, Hezbollah could be a big factor in any next war inside Palestine, even if it doesn't spill into Lebanon.
Say, Mohsen Abbas, so you have all of that our guest just said there on the one side, and on the other side, on the other hand, you have the fact that Israeli, whether it was their security systems or their so-called Iron Dome system or whatever other machinery or military capabilities they have, was not able to down this drone. What does that say about the Israeli apparatus as a whole?
Well, it says that steadily Israel's erstwhile propaganda and image of invincibility as a military power in the region is all but shattered. The fact is that the only superiority they now have is the nuclear one, which they don't admit, but they've got plenty of nuclear weapons. But who are they going to use those on? Hezbollah is not a conventional army. It doesn't fight in the conventional sense, although in Syria they've now acquired huge expertise, not only in terms of working with other conventional armies, but also in foreign territories, and also acquiring the skills to use the most sophisticated UAV and ballistic missile technology. Israel really is now in a total quandary, because they know that not only is the technology rapidly increasing, but they failed with all those bombing expeditions they supposedly were doing in Syria, which they no doubt they were violating. The whole purpose of those apparently was to prevent Hezbollah getting this technology or having the ability to do this. But in reality, Israel's defense mechanisms are being exposed. It's very easy now to envisage Hezbollah being able to send the UAVs in swarms to, say, for instance, the Haifa port, and completely knocking out an entire sort of lifeline for Israel. So this has huge implications.
Well, the focus is on this Israeli Iron Dome system, so-called Iron Dome system, Leith Maruf, in one sense, as it to have failed once again, which Israel so highly touts it, the purpose and function, which obviously it's not doing what it's supposed to do. First of all, why is that happening? What does that say about the security that Israel does not have as a result of this not functioning properly?
You know, the Zionist entity is not only built on mythology that doesn't have anything to do with history of the region in terms of creating this mythology of a Jewish state. It also, most of its story that is sold to the rest of the world is mythology, including this idea that it is a strong nation with huge technological advancements. All of that is a myth. The reality is, without direct American interference, even in 1973, the Zionist entity would have collapsed in the face of the Syrian and Egyptian army at the time. So what we have right now is a fragile colony that doesn't have direct support of the army of the United States, because the U.S. is busy trying to create war with China and Russia, and the resistance is showing clearly. that in this moment of exit of the Americans from Western Asia, it will be very easy to take out this colony and liberate the lands of Palestine, Syria, Lebanon from these colonists.
On the other hand, we have Hamas that I'd like to point out here, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, in which in its most recent war, we saw not only their firepower to have increased dramatically in terms of not only the number of missiles, but also it traveling further into Israel and, again, penetrating this so-called Iron Dome system, which failed to bring down all the missiles. Even according to the stats given by Israel itself, of the more than 4,360 rockets and mortar attacks by Palestinian armed groups, 3,573 penetrated Israeli airspace. So something is going on that Israel is not able to stop these missiles.
Yes, it's quite clear that the systems that they have are not adequate. They're not up to the task. We've seen this also in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia with the Yemeni Ansarullah and what they've been able to penetrate in terms of taking out American systems as well, which is where the Israelis largely have got a lot of these kind of, defensive batteries, supposedly. There's also the failure of UAE. So what you're seeing is that the actual collapse of supposedly, really efficient technological defense capabilities right across the region. And that's going to encourage the resistance axis hugely. I mean, the fact is that already Hezbollah proved in 2003, 2006, that actually Israel as a military unit doesn't even have the morale or the training or the willpower to be able to last beyond a handful of days. They did that with Hamas as well. They didn't dare invade. Let's not forget, even though Hamas penetrated the Iron Dome, Israel could not pluck up the courage to launch an offensive on Gaza. Now, that's just probably the weakest part of the entire resistance axis. Hezbollah is kind of obviously slightly stronger than them. 100,000 is what Sayyid Nasrallah says in terms of military boots on the ground that they have. Just recently, he pointed that out after the Tayune incident. He's also made it clear that Hezbollah is now capable of seeing and observing all of the kind of defense mechanisms that Israel has, and they will surprise him. He's actually said over and over again that we will surprise you as to how much we know and what we can do. Add to this, the defense systems that Hezbollah itself has, and you know they're capable of operating all sorts of light infantry and armored weaponry. Of course, all the weapons that actually the missile weapons that took out the tanks that Israel has. Israel still hasn't found solutions to those problems, and any further engagement with Hezbollah or Hamas, I think, is only going to increasingly expose just how frail they are. And don't forget, the recruits that Israel has, their own military has admitted that the soldiers they have are just not motivated or able to come up to the same levels as the resistance. I mean, you've got to really count also the individual morale and the spiritual and religious willpower of the likes of Hezbollah and the rest of the resistance axis. They have a just cause. They have a burning in their heart for liberating Al-Quds, not just as a Palestinian land, but also as a spiritual home.
Yeah, just a side note here, which is quite ironic, Laith Maruf, is that Israel is going around trying to sell this so-called Iron Dome missile system to some of the Arab countries that they've so-called normalized with them. And it's you know, that's beyond words when it's not working for them, that how that can work for these some of these Persian Gulf Arab countries.
Yeah, I mean, it shows you also how little control these vessels and the Gulf have of their money, because everybody knows how actually useless these weapons are. We already saw the war last year on Palestine and how useless these Israeli systems were in stopping the missiles of the resistance in Gaza. And still they're being forced to put money into it. I don't think they even have a choice. They're being told what to do. You know, the other thing that we need to connect here is that, remember, during the war last year on Palestine, the resistance said that there was at least eight different drones lying in over the whole battlefield of historic Palestine and monitoring all the movements of the Israeli army from the joint control room that included Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, and Hamas from here, from Lebanon. So if during that 11-day war, the whole movement of the Zionists was monitored by 8 drones in the air all the time, and none of those drones were shot down except one, if we remember, at the end of the war, that means that it's game over in terms of the ability of the Zionists to do any movement on the ground without being targeted.
I'd like to capitalize on that a little bit. You did talk about it, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, the fact that there's no desire amongst Israeli soldiers. And this was kind of confirmed by this officer, Israeli officer, that made quite a stir within Israeli media when he came out and said Israeli military not ready for war. And he mentioned the fact that the morale is very low. That's a whole other topic, I think, as to why the morale is low. But obviously, if we take a look at the different components of the army, if you have the weakened state of Israeli military capabilities, along with an army that does not have the morale, then what are you left with in case there's a war?
Well, that's why I think Israel is doing everything it can to avoid war. What it wants to do is create a kind of an asymmetric war using the likes of the UAE, Saudi Arabia. They'd rather have a buffer zone, and they'd rather use what I term the Zio-Arabian monarchs to do their dirty work. But the reality is, in any war that Israel engages with the resistance, it's been proven already that Saudi Arabia and the likes of the UAE can't even take on Ansarullah and the force that exists there. And of course, Israel has its eye on the Islamic Republic of Iran. That's its real target. And what hope does Israel stand if it's going to rattle the tail of the Islamic Republic of Iran, given it can't even deal with those forces on the ground, which people call the proxies of Iran? In reality, they're resistance forces that have risen up indigenously. And it's also a reality that whether it's the Russians or the Iranians or others who are in the business of selling weapons, the Americans sell weapons as well, perfectly within their rights. But all of these resistance groups are faring rather well, I would say, in a toe-to-toe battle with the proxies of Israel. And that's exactly what Saudi Arabia is, and it's exactly what all of the other Arab monarchies are. It's really time for those monarchies, I think, to assess the partnerships that they're building up. They've seen very clearly that they can offer them very little protection. You can see that these days, with modern technological warfare as it is, just the example that you need to look at is the one in Nagorno-Karabakh and the way technology was used there. You can see that if you have this kind of technology, you can inflict absolutely a huge devastation very accurately. The Islamic Republic of Iran proved that with Ayn al-Assad as well, and the Americans and the Israelis know very well exactly what they're capable of. And I would say whatever Islamic Republic of Iran has, it's not too far in the distance future, and perhaps it already exists, that a reality will be that Hezbollah and Hamas will have exactly the same technology. Now, that is going to really put the cat amongst the pigeons, and the Israeli military men have to really reconsider exactly what any war would imply. And it may well be at some stage where the Palestinians just become so fed up with the kind of injustices that's gone on. Would you really blame them for going on an offensive war once they are fully capable and loaded with all the necessary weaponry? I certainly wouldn't begrudge them after 70 years of the kind of injustice that Israel has inflicted. And certainly now, its military and its other capabilities are showing massive vulnerabilities.
Well, I'm sure that based on the last war, and since we saw the resistance factions inside Gaza to have increased not only the number of missiles, as I mentioned before, and its range, that they are on their path to obviously complete their arsenal and advance it, whether it's technologically or otherwise. But you know, what's very interesting here, Leif Maruf, is when you take a look at Israel, it and I'm trying to put things into context and then ask you to do that for us, really, is we see Israel attack Syria, and we see Israel without really thinking about the ramifications attack Gaza. Does Israel